howdy, howdy to all my real estate agents, my lenders, my real estate investors, and heck, right now, even to all you Mavs and Stars fans in North Texas right now, as they are both in the playoffs. The Mavs tied up the series last night, one game apiece with the Clippers, and the Stars, unfortunately, are down 2-0 against the Golden Knights, which is an odd name, but Vegas is odd, so oh well, that's what it is. But you aren't here to hear about basketball and hockey. You have tuned into the Texas Real Estate and Finance Podcast, and I'm your host, Mike Mills, a North Texas mortgage banker with Geneva Financial. And I do this podcast because I like talking a lot, but I like doing mortgages more. So if you know someone that needs help getting through that tough loan or getting that tough loan across the finish line, then give me a shout. My team and I are here to help. And these days we have lots of time to get some loans done for you. So give us a shout if we can help you out. Now, today's episode, we are talking all about home equity and investing. Now, did you know that the average mortgage having homeowner right now holds $299,000 in equity on average? And the vast majority of those folks also have a mortgage rate under 4%. So refinancing that first mortgage and getting a rate that's in the sevens is not exactly high on the list of things to do. But as a real estate professional, your job is to know everything there is to know about all things real estate. And when you're looking for reasons to engage with your past clients or market to your database, the best way to do that is to try to help them solve a problem. And the problem right now is that they have a ton of money they can't access and desire to pay off some big credit cards maybe, or even invest in more real estate. Because right now, there are more and more, homes popping up as listings that could be had for better and better prices. So how can you help them solve this problem? Well, my guest today is here to tell us how to do just that. And it isn't just your standard home equity loan that many of you are thinking about. There are some new innovative ways to tap the equity that you may have never even heard of until today, that is. And oh, by the way, if today's episode helps you find a new way to help your customers and just, or you just love hearing the sound of my voice, surely there's someone out there that likes that, right? Well, probably not, but I can dream. But either way, please like, subscribe, comment, share, etc. And I'll do you a favor. If you leave me a review on our website, I will personally send you a Texas Real Estate and Finance Podcast t-shirt so you can be the coolest kid on your block. You probably won't want to wear it around town, but it is really comfortable lounging around the house t-shirt. So drop me a review and I will drop you some merch. Now, today my guest is a tech developer, a podcast host, and he serves on the Massachusetts Mortgage Bankers Association Technology Committee. He isn't a Texan and he talks kind of funny, but he knows his stuff and he has some insight on some great new products and ideas that are out there when it comes to tapping home equity. And he's here to share it with all of us. We'll probably get into the market a little bit as well and let you know what's in store for the upcoming summer real estate world. So fresh from the car and the parking lot, please welcome Michael Keller to the podcast. Mike, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me. I just got off a podcast and that's because I do travel around the country over the last decade or so, and I've been at Texas many times, including the Texas Bankers Association events. So it's very important to be on the ground to hear different opportunities. And this one I wanted to tell you about is one that is on my radar now. I usually have birdies and different indicators of what's coming to the market, and this is one that is going to come. It's going to be a storm, in my opinion. And I want to be one of the people that rides the wave, and hopefully your listeners do as well.
Yeah, I'm really interested to hear about it. You know, I want to get to your backstory a little bit on how you got into this world and into this mortgage world. Now, you do a podcast yourself. It's called More Talk, and M-O with the big M-O on the front of it there, which is, you know, geared more towards mortgage originators and lending. And my show is a little bit more towards agents and real estate in general. But so I want to get into that. But I do want to start with, and I apologize for my Boston accent. I had to poke a little fun at you there. But
no, we were down in San Antonio presenting to a mortgage company. And in the middle of the presentation, I overheard two women say, They sound just like Ben Affleck and Matt Damon. They didn't say look like them. They said sound like them, right?
So yeah, you take either way, right?
Carries with us.
So tell me a little bit about what you're hearing out there, because you are pretty dialed into the mortgage banker side of thing. And before new products kind of hit the market and get out there to the general public, you know, guys like you get a little bit of an inside track on some of this stuff. So tell me what you're hearing. Obviously, you know, Housing Wire just did a story recently about Freddie Mac kind of looking at dipping their toe into the home equity second lien product market a little bit more, which we'll get into as well. But I want to hear what you're hearing out there with some of the new technology when it comes to lending.
Yeah, the big piece is I work for myself, so I'm not caught up in one product. And so I'm talking to a lot of leaders, C-level at large IMBs, banks, credit unions, and that allows me to get information from people just by talking. And I've been hearing, just like the second mortgage and HELOC market has been getting liquidity for a while now, and you'll start to see it hit them, and it's slow adoption down to loan officers because we could talk about it, but it just doesn't pay enough to really get that push it should.
Yeah.
And there's a new product out there, HEI loans. And
HEI?
Yeah. They're like,
okay.
So home equity instruments. And technically, a real estate agent or a lender could get involved in it. But for lenders, the take is you should go first because maybe you can change your name. You know, you could be a real estate finance company instead of a mortgage company. Because right now, there's $13 trillion of available debt out there to be had among 800,000 loan officers. So it's, and that's mostly the purchase market and refinances. And the amount of people that are going to refinance is extremely low. I think 70% of people are below 4%.
Yeah.
Now there's $26 trillion of tappable equity out there. And there's very little home finance companies. It should be mortgage, but they don't go into the equity space. And when you think about it, before the crisis, the home equity used to be used to solve problems and create opportunities. Now, obviously, it was abused and regulators came out there. And rather than fixing it and massaging it, they did a lot in their power to really close end it.
Yeah.
But an HEI loan allows you to get instantly cash out of your equity, and the investor becomes almost like a JV. And so they give you 50% of the equity you want to tap in present and future value. Mm-hmm. And then you don't have any payments on it. It doesn't show up on your credit report. It doesn't count against DTI. And it really is a way to take some, I think, money off the table, because if the value goes down, you don't owe anything back to the investor, but they are going to share in a split, which I can explain more going up.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think it just provides a lot of opportunity, not just to actually make money, but to have conversations that are not being had with homeowners.
Yes.
They have all this equity and they're not talking about it because you don't have any vehicles to talk about it. And it's a boring topic otherwise. So what are they going to talk about their neighbor with it, right? It's private. So I think it's an unbelievable chance to open up opportunities, and we can get more into that.
So what you're saying is that you can, so these are private investors, I'm assuming, right? At least right now, that will allow you to tap into your equity, but not have a payment, and it doesn't reflect on credit. Now, I have heard, obviously, there are, you know, anytime you do, from what I understand, anytime you do any type of asset loan, because that's essentially what we're talking about, is we're talking about an asset loan. Anytime you do a leveraged asset loan, it doesn't really show up on credit. This happens much more in a commercial environment than it does in the private sector. But when you're doing those asset loans, there's no credit because it's based off the asset. This is how, you know, lending is done on like apartment complexes, right? If the apartment complex can generate X amount of revenue, it's something that the loan is based off of that. It's not necessarily based off of any kind of, you know, the value of it per se, because the value is the cash flow of how it comes through. So what you're saying is that, let's say somebody has $100,000 in equity in their property, they can tap $50,000 of that, and then they wouldn't have a payment. So what's the structure of repayment? Is it just interest? Like, how does that work?
So if you were to borrow $50,000, you owe back in, say, 10 years, $100,000. But the blended rate comes out to almost current first market mortgage when you take into effect compounding interest. And so you don't have any payments for the next 10 years. So there's a lot of opportunity. You could take the money now and build an ADU unit if you're in California or Massachusetts and actually make income off of it. You could work on
anybody real quick. Anybody that doesn't know what ADU is, because that's a newer topic. That's a it's additional dwelling unit inside, which is becoming actually a big segment of the market. You're seeing a lot of those pop up everywhere.
Yeah, and I do a lot of advocating. It's the fight against the not in my backyard, because obviously you don't want your neighbor putting a rental unit in the backyard where there was a swing set. Yeah, but the reality is, with the way inventory is and affordable housing, they are coming, they are being pushed. And this is about taking advantage of the times. These loans need education. The loan officers need to be able to educate past that sticker shock, because they do make sense. And so then the investor would get 80% of the 20% of the upside, and you would get 80%. So in a growing market or in an appreciation of a home, you're both participating. And that's how you have to look at it. You can't have that mindset of, oh, I could have got 100, but 100 of zero is zero. So they are taking a risk there. And again, it's for opportunities and problem solving, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about a bigger picture. These are coming, going to be rated by the rating agencies. They're going to get liquidation. They exist today, but they're run by people that don't know mortgage and they don't know real estate. And it's more of a real estate. I think that's what we're trying to say. Lenders have a chance to be home finance advisors. And this is advice around home finance. They exist today. They're not run by mortgage providers, and the mortgage providers underwrite everything that comes in. And so they're not doing it correctly. It right. should be a lender or a loan officer should know which one should be doing it, which one shouldn't be doing it. So when it comes in, it makes a lot of sense, and they're able to use it for, which we can talk about, but you guys can think of it too. There's a lot of sales opportunities, and I think creating a referral ethos around it that has not been used yet. You could use it with trusts, the ability to share wealth among your family, the ability to work with financial advisors and use that equity for better purposes. They can't advise people to take equity out of their home, but they can advise what to do once you get the cash. So
right.
you can work with them on different options as you go. And there will be some catches, right, that you sure. might call them. But with the proper education, this makes sense in a growing environment. And that's what I'm trying to help lenders get involved in early, so that their loan officers can be part of that wave.
Yeah. So, okay. So this makes sense then. So what you're saying is that you are basically sharing future appreciation in your home with an investor. So the idea is that your house, now this, let's say this product had existed or is mainstream, let's say it that way. If it was mainstream, say back in 2019, and people are using this, and since 2019, there's been close to 40% appreciation in a lot of markets right now. So you're sharing in the appreciation of the house with the investor. So you don't get to keep all of it, but you share in it with somebody else, but you get access to the cash without having to tap your first line, because if you're sitting on a 3% mortgage right now, you're not exactly looking to refinance that into 7.5% to try to get equity out. And even on second liens with HELOCs and whatnot, those are 9% and 10%, in the market right now. And a lot of banks are actually tightening down on even offering those. Now I do think that'll expand a little bit as the market, once the market slows down, which it really is right now, especially with, today, GDP numbers came out. They were well below expectations, actually. But within that, there were some higher than expected, quarterly PCE numbers. So inflation was still running a little bit hot. So you saw pretty much every market right now, except for gold, is tanking. The bond market's going down, the stock market's going down, even the crypto market's going down. The only thing that's going up right now is gold. So as things get tighter, you do start to see things loosening up because people are looking to take more risk to bring in more revenue. So I do think on the second liens with the HELOCs, you're going to get a little bit more flexibility down the road, maybe even, on investment properties, which was limited for a long time because people just didn't have to do it. But what this is essentially is it's like a joint venture, like you said, with an investor on your home, which is, again, can have its own downsides. It's not perfect for every single situation, but it's another product. It's another type of innovative way to tap into equity that wasn't really previously there before.
Yeah. And I'll talk to you about second mortgages. I think second mortgages should be used more and more. The problem is first, and this is the same, I'm almost a futurist by talking to enough people and putting together the information in a way that makes sense to me. And in the second lien position, I had a lot of talks with certain servicers, sub-servicers. I saw this market coming, but the reason people didn't get second mortgages wasn't because it didn't make sense with that equity. It was because there was not correspondent availability. So what that means for the average listener is it had to be brokered out by the mortgage companies. And they're manufacturing plants in some ways. That's how they're able to get you better pricing. And they don't want to do deals that they don't build in-house. And so that was about 2 years ago. And the domino started falling. Companies like Spring EQ went out there and were able to put together a bunch of second mortgages and sell it on Wall Street. And then it followed with Chase and Fifth Thirds got involved. And then there was a company called Georgia Banking only do correspondent with the people that use them for other services to make it easy, warehouse and banking. But once that became liquid on Wall Street, they said, you know what? Everybody can have correspondent. So now your mortgage loan officers have more access to seconds than they had before. Does it still pay enough?
No.
No. It's better to use their time to go find first mortgages if you take the law of numbers than to go to seconds. So what does that mean? They're not calling anybody under 4% right now when they could be calling them, thinking about the second, finding out what their kids are up to, finding out what the neighbor's doing. Is anyone new in the neighborhood? All of that activity. And that's the $26 trillion they're not talking to. Well, these pay. These vehicles pay. And that's why I think they're going to be a great lead. They're also going to be a great waterfall. This piece is not about more lenient second mortgages becoming available to me. I think it's about being able to pay more to the lender, trickle down, so the loan officer actually makes enough money it's worth their time. And so I think you're going to see a lot more people hear about how second mortgages can help. And why is Freddie Mac doing this, which is a sign to everybody in the industry? Fannie and Freddie, 70% of the loans they have, and they own almost a lot of them, we'll say, in this country, right?
Yes.
They're under 4%. And so if people aren't going to touch it, these are assets. That means they're not fixing the gutter. They can't afford the $14,000 roof. A great point is a lot of people that bought back when you were talking, Mike, they couldn't afford to buy their home today at the price it is today. They could only afford their home at what they bought it for. So they can't afford some of these renovations. They can't afford renovations on $1 million home, even though they're living in $1 million home because they bought it as a $400,000 home. So I think my theory, Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae recognize this. The refinance market in a whole is not what it's going to be. They need to make it easier so people can take out money so that they can fix up these assets for the next 10, 15 years because they essentially are on the hook for them. I think that's why you're going to see a lot more seconds. And I think this is going to be a great lead, but also a great waterfall. I don't mean to keep hogging the microphone, but you have 76 million gig employees now. Those didn't exist 8 years ago. Etsy, Uber, right? DoorDash. All those people can't get second mortgages.
No.
If they own a home, right? These HEI loans, there's no DTI. It's just like you said, it's equity. They can get them. They can then use them as vehicles to pass down generational wealth, to improve it, to pay off problems that they're having with inflation. There's just more opportunity, and they don't have payments along the way to figure out what they're going to do. And I think loan officers, at least right now, even though it's more of a real estate vehicle, right? Real estate licensing, that's what we'd have to bring. But I think loan officers are in a better position to explain this properly. And that's what excites me. And that's why I'm trying to get it to the lenders, owners, to say, you have a real chance here. You have the right people in place. They have the right database. You know all the LTVs of millions of people across all the ICE Encompass databases of the world. You know what their DTI was when they took out their loan, and you can assume with credit card debt, it's a lot higher.
Yep.
I think HEI loans for the ones that get involved early are going to make a lot of sense. And I'm excited to just do what I do, which is push things into the market like I did with the mobile app.
Yeah. Well, and I saw a thing, to your point, I saw Redfin actually just did a survey, I believe. I think it was Redfin, where they said, they asked, you know, I don't know how many people it was, 20,000, 30,000 homeowners. Could you afford your house? Do you think you could afford your house today if you, had to buy it in the current market? And it was something like 35% of them said no, that they wouldn't be able to afford their home, you know, based on today's current rates and current prices. And so, you know, that's where this whole lock-in effect comes into play, which people talk about, but I don't think they think it's just about interest rates, which it is, but it's not just about interest rates. It's taking a house that I bought literally 2 or 3 years ago for $300,000 with a 3% mortgage, and now having to sell that house and then trying to buy something, even just the same, you know, equivalency, that's now at $400,000. And now I'm having to pay 7.5% on that mortgage. Right. And people just, they can't do that. They don't want to do that. There's, you know, the only ones that are moving at this point are people that absolutely have to. Job changes, you know, if you just look at the market as a whole, the, you know, the cash transactions are way up. They're the highest they've been in quite some time, at least as a share of the market, I should say. You see the jumbo market actually surprisingly is very high on homes over $1 million, because again, these are cash purchases. These are people with lots of money that did really, really well, more so than the average American. So these are the things that are moving right now, but the $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 homes, especially pre-existing homes, are just, you know, they're in the toilet. They're just not moving because people can't afford to do it. And when you can't afford to do that, then what you're going to be looking to do is you're going to be looking to make upgrades to the property that you currently live in, because if you can't move, you got to make those changes. And anybody listening to that, just so, you know, I try to keep things on my, on a fifth grade level, because that's kind of where my brain is to some extent as well. But whenever, you're looking at a mortgage bank, whether it be a company like Quicken or like Geneva Financial, which is what we're an independent mortgage bank. We specialize in primary mortgages. And the reason for that is because these are mortgages that go to the GSEs, the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. They go to, they're insured by HUD. They're sold on the secondary market. So there is more revenue inside those because they're larger loans. There's a bigger market for them. There's more investors that are willing to purchase them. So you can make more money on those loans as a company than you can on these second liens that are $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000. There's not as much revenue in there. So as a general rule of thumb, most companies, if you know, you're trying to make a profit because you need to pay your employees, and you know, this is how all this stuff works. So you're going to gear everything towards those primary mortgages much more so than the secondary ones, because there's just less profitability. But they are a very good tool, and at times like right now, when everybody's looking for a reason to contact your database, to reach out to people, to say, hey, look, you know, especially for realtors, look, I'm your real estate expert. I know everything there is to know about roofing. You want to talk about insurance premiums and where those are? I'm going to tell you about that. I'm going to send you emails. I'm going to, you know, update you on how premiums are going through the roof. No pun intended. I'm going to tell you about how, you know, how much equity you have in your home, what it's worth, what you could do with that equity, the different vehicles in which you could use it. And as a realtor, you may not get a sale or a buy out of that, but the idea is that you have to contact as many people as you can and get in front of them as often as you can, because you want to get in touch with their network. You want to talk to their family members and their friends. And maybe that person that bought a whole home from you 3 years ago isn't in a place to move, but their cousin that has been renting for their entire life and is sick of it and pissed off at their landlord because they just raised the rent on them again, maybe they are looking to buy and they need strategies to be able to do that. So that's the idea, is that whether or not somebody could actually use this tool and it's practical for someone, because I think that's where a lot of people go to a place, well, yeah, I mean, I could sell that to my Uncle Sally, but she's not going to want to do that. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't matter that she wants to do it or not. It's just it's a key to the front door. It's a way for you to communicate with someone without trying to reach out to them and go, hey, you want to buy? Hey, you want to buy? Hey, you want to sell? Hey, you want to sell? It's just another way to stay in front. And I think that's the power of these tools, is that right now in the market, there's going to be different products and there's going to be different things that pop up that are going to help homeowners solve problems. Like I said in the very beginning, we're trying to solve problems for homeowners that are dealing with a lot of debt, that are dealing with, you know, I think whether people realize it or not, because the job numbers are, in my opinion, kind of BS. You know, there's a lot of people losing their jobs right now. There's people that lost jobs that are having a hard time finding jobs. And so there's a lot of things that you can do to kind of help solve issues. And I think products like these are going to play a huge role in helping all real estate professionals contact their people and market to them a little better.
Yeah. And you can buy a new home with it because it doesn't count against your DTI.
Yes.
In the future, because it's not on your credit report. There's no, it's not like you're hiding it. There is no monthly payment.
Yeah.
So you can use the money to go buy a new home while you're figuring out your family. And I go advocate all the time in DC on behalf of mortgage bankers. I am the biggest believer of generational wealth is built through owning real estate. And you could take money out of house A, use it to go buy a better fit house B, and the real estate agent would get the transaction. And eventually, you probably have to make a move on your home on house A over the next 10 years. There's usually some maturity here, 15. And so that could be another transaction for the real estate agent who could be in that referral ethos. Yeah. And I'll point out one other sort of piece that we don't talk about enough in this industry is a lot of the interest on 30-year fix are in the first earlier, the more earlier you are in your mortgage, the more interest you're paying. And as you, yes. And that's just a normal amortization schedule. So if you can do one of these loans, so you're staying in your loan longer, you're actually have more months of paying more principal before you go back to the 30-year fixed again and start all over. So I think this is selling math. And it, the math either makes sense for some people or it doesn't for others. I'm at the front of this because I know it's going to get liquidity. And when it gets liquidity, that means there's going to be a lot of incentive to go out and sell it. And yeah. I think the right people to sell it are loan officers because it, one, that's what people used to do. They used to use their equity to solve problems and create opportunities. You talked about losing a job. That's a problem. We got scared of it because during the crisis, people would use it to pay off their jet ski and then they would go get buy another jet ski, right? And we as loan officers said, oh, that wasn't what we, when we drew the T, we came in on the left side and we showed you how we were going to fix it. And then you went out. Now we feel like we advised you into the wrong area. But you made the right math decision. They were the ones that chose to go out and get another jet ski. I don't know why a loan officer or a lender, and I was one of those loan officers back then. I don't know why we keep punishing ourselves and not allowing us to work with that $26 trillion of equity because we're afraid that my grown-up uncle can't make a decision not to go out and get another jet ski. It was different times. I think people will make more sound decisions, and you should have – there's more – opportunity with technology to build a better referral ethos system to make sure they're using the money correctly. But self-employed people like myself, gig economy workers, we are trapped with our equity. And it's vehicles like this that help the 76 million alone, let alone somebody with a W-2 and wants to actually has a creative idea or has a leaky roof that could use this as well.
Yeah. Well, and two, you know, we say this in the industry a lot because, I mean, it's just, it's true, but it gets cliched and it gets overused where, you know, I joke or not really joke, it's serious. Anytime someone asks me is it, you know, when's the best time for me to buy a house? I always say yesterday. Yesterday was the best time for you to buy a house. And the reason I say that is because if you look at just any historical chart of home values over the last since the existence of time. Okay. Real estate does nothing but go up. Okay. There are periods of time where it will take small dips, but even back when we had the worst financial crisis, all related to housing that occurred back in 2008, the market fell about 20%, maybe across the board. I mean, in Texas, we really didn't even feel it that much. Might maybe 30% in certain areas, but it wasn't very long before it was right back up. And, you know, the $180,000 or $200,000 house back then is now $450,000 today. So the it continues to go up. And in the, you know, we've talked about this a little bit before, you know, I wear a little tinfoil hats all the time. And my personal belief is that there is a somewhat concerted effort by those that have extreme amounts of wealth to try to make home ownership as difficult and expensive as possible because, you know, there's the national GDP, housing makes up 30% of our national GDP, all things related to housing. So there's just a ton of money. And it's one of the largest expenses that anybody has in their daily, you know, in their monthly household budget. So if a company like BlackRock can get in and have you pay them your $2,000 a month or $2,500 a month on an asset that they own that continues to appreciate and generates cash flow on a regular basis, then they're going to do that. And they're going to do everything they can. I mean, I don't know if you've seen, but the build to rent market, the large companies that are coming in and paying for, you know, 500 homes to be built in San Antonio that will never, ever hit the market for purchase that are only going to be for rent. That market is up like 30% just, or 30 or 40% just in the past couple of years. So this is headed that direction. So my point of that is that when you have this much equity in a property that you can't get out of or can't, that you can't use, and you want to put it in a place that isn't the stock market that may crash if you pick the wrong thing, or that isn't Bitcoin that may or may not go down depending on, you know, where the winds are blowing. Real estate is the place to put money that generates cash flow and appreciates continuously over time, which is why 95% of the millionaires in the United States have come from some level of real estate and where they've grown. So that's the biggest benefit to those that have a good chunk of it, is even at higher prices, you know, it's not getting cheaper, at least not anytime soon that I can see. What are your thoughts on that?
I love the quote, the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago. Which, if you bought a house 20 years ago, right? And the second best time is today, right? So like, if you haven't, they'll quote, like, if you haven't done it 20 years ago, get on it today. I think it's the same. I believe in generational wealth. But I also see, you know, as we're getting older, there is trusts which protect families, because a lot more people are going to have to go to assisted livings, right? Because they're living longer. And if you don't play that properly, that money goes to everybody but your family. It goes to the assisted living facility till you run out. Then you go on Medicaid. There's reports of different probates, if you don't write the proper will, ending up with ability to get it over to the county very easily when it obviously shouldn't. I think making sure you have all this equity and you're not protecting it, I think, is where my headset is at. And if you can't afford an attorney at $5,000, but you have $400,000 in equity, that might be a great area for this, you know, home equity financial advisor type role, a loan officer morphing into and getting the right advice on helping them protect the equity of the great mortgage they got them into. But bottom line is what you're saying, Mike. The home is where you build wealth. The home is where you keep wealth. The 30-year fix is the greatest instrument in the world, and every other country is jealous we have it. And it's not just the loan officer can handle the math and the real estate agent. Like, you just need to be protected on the buyer's side. That's why I think this NAR thing is so important. You need right buyer's representation when you're looking around. And I think this gives more opportunity to reach out to real estate agents. And again, I'm just predicting that it's going to be a market. And whether it's tap an app, push a button, get it into your account, or where I think it should be is the loan officers get ahead of it and make it their product.
Yeah.
And that's all I'm saying. And that's what I'm going to do, is bring it to the market, and then I will just be the voice of it. But the real brains will be the ones working with the owners of the lenders to get it through and make sure there's money on Wall Street to buy it.
Well, and that's been I think the average person doesn't realize that this particular type of vehicle is not new. It's been around forever. It's just new on the general consumer level to be able to get into their home, because, you know, the big trick or whatever they talk about all the time is, you know, if you're Jeff Bezos, right, you go buy a, you know, $4 million yacht, right? And you, by the way, you take leverage on your stock in Amazon, which is, you know, $4 million. He's got billions of dollars. And then you leverage that stock to purchase with cash a $4 million yacht. And then you take out another loan on that $4 million yacht to live your life, essentially. And you have all of this debt per se, right? But none of it is being counted in your cash flow, and you don't pay taxes on any of it. So you never have to actually, you know, cash out anything or sell your stock in a lot of cases in order to get money to exist. You're just moving debt around. Now, I'm not saying that that's a good way to do it for the average person that doesn't have $30 billion, but I am saying that these tools have been in play for a long time. When crypto popped up, one of the things that happens, you know, I pay a lot of attention to Bitcoin and it's something that's my little side hobby that I like to look at. And, you know, that is a big player there. If you have an account with Coinbase, right, and you buy whatever, $100,000 worth of Bitcoin, if you want to go on there and borrow $50,000 against that 100 grand, you can get it almost instantly. Like it happens within a few hours. If you, I don't do that myself, but I know many people that do. And you can leverage that asset to borrow money. It doesn't show up on your credit. There isn't a payment that's due on it. It just, if your asset falls to a certain level, you have to sell off part of it in order to get it. So there is, you know, downsides with the risk and the fluctuation of the market. That's why Bitcoin is one of those where, because they have such big swings, you'll see big crashes because people over leverage themselves. But these tools have been in place. That's my point, is they've existed for a long time. It's just now it's being brought to the general consumer whose biggest asset that they own is their home. And with the amount of appreciation that's occurred and the amount of value that these homes now carry, there is a tappable market to be able to get in and use that money. Because at the end of the day, you know, when I do mortgages for folks, one of the things I always tell them is, now it's a little different today because with rates as high as they are, you know, you got to work the math out a little bit and see if it makes sense. But, you know, back when we were just at 4%, even 5%, I would say, hey, look, put down the minimum or put down 20%, because anything in between doesn't really move the needle. You're saving like $65 for every 10 grand. But that 4% debt that you're paying on, okay, if you wanted to put $200,000 down on your house because you wanted to save your $200 a month, you know, on your mortgage payment, or $250 a month, but if you took that same $200,000 and stuck it into an index fund that makes on average, you know, 4 to 6% or 5 to 7% or whatever the numbers are these days, that's going to be a way, and it compounds, right, over 20 years. That's going to be a way better use of those funds than sticking it into a house that's going to appreciate that you're just saving on your monthly debt. So it's just a matter of looking at it differently. And this is how uber wealthy use their money and their assets. And again, it's not for everybody, but it is certainly a tool that could be helpful for a lot of people that need relief.
You could buy the Phoenix Suns or the Cleveland Cavaliers under a stock leverage plan if you wanted.
Yes.
I agree. And I think when these start to hit the market, there will be, it'll be run by mortgage companies, and therefore they'll be able to create their own programs. So one I'm hearing is for the low and moderate income areas, there'll be restrictions on this. They'll only lend it to pay off certain debts to help provide relief in this inflation market. So I'm not saying this is just a new vehicle coming. I believe this is something people are going to write product off of and write protections around, and be a way that, you know, real estate agents can give advice too. This is to protect some people from losing all that equity and they never touched it because they didn't know they could or they weren't able to. Yeah. And at the end, they just assume that, I don't know, it went to the right spot and it doesn't. And so I think it's just an incredible opportunity to make sure that the math can work, and it might not just be mortgage math. You might want to bring in referral partners that better explain what to do with that. Go put solar on your house, and now you could get money from the solar company, right? Like, I don't know if that makes sense or not, but it will someday. And if you're able to get information on how you should use your equity better, and you have all this equity, that's another thing. Some of these programs, the average person didn't have that much equity to go out there and do great opportunities. Now they do. They just don't know how to access it or if it's worth the risk. And that's where a lot of the education will be. And that's where, when a parent company signs up for a program like this, the trickle down has to get to the loan officers, if they're up for it, on how to explain it, how to manage it, how to educate people on it. But I think all ships rise with the tide. If you're talking to your database again that has equity, you'll be having more conversations. Those behaviors, if you have the right technique, will lead to more opportunity. And then more opportunity will help you brand your reputation in the area as a problem solver or as an opportunity giver.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's a great, again, going back to, you know, just using it as a tool to get people into your database and talk. I mean, you know, you want to talk about a great lead funnel. I mean, if you're creating information out there on social media, making videos, making guides on how to, you know, tap this equity and get into it, because there are millions of Americans that are, you know, leveraged to the hilt on credit cards right now. They're delinquent on their credit cards. I mean, delinquency rates are the highest they've been since 2008 on credit cards today. And they're looking for help. And so if you're educating people on social media about products like these and putting it out there and saying, hey, drop me your email and I'll send you more information about this, you're just adding to your database of buyers and sellers. So this is how you build careers. This isn't how you solve your problem today, but the more people you can contact and the more people that you can get your message out to on a regular basis, the more opportunities that you're going to have to help people buy and sell homes, whether you're a realtor, whether you're a lender, whether you're an investor. There's so many different ways to use these tools to kind of help develop your marketing strategy and develop your database so you have more clients that you can reach on a regular basis. And that ultimately, you know, is the goal, because these days with transactions being fewer and far between, it's a numbers game. You got to get in front of as many people as you can, reach out to as many people as possible with as many different ways, and try to get them, you know, to reach out and ask questions and start a conversation. And that's what these are. These are conversation starters with folks to help you discuss, because then you might be able to help them solve a problem that they didn't even know they had. But a lot of times they have to talk to an expert before they even know that, right?
Yeah, to build on what you said, to zoom out just from a social aspect of it, I believe for a long time, the loan officer was the best financial advisor for a homeowner around their home P&L, their home balance sheet. I'm talking everything, credit cards, anything that shows up on a credit report. A loan officer typically gave advice, and probably every 2 years, that helped sharpen the skills of a consumer on what to do.
Yep.
These golden handcuffs, these low rates, have shut off the light to that financial advisor for that homeowner, that yeah. person that needs that advice. You don't have the Visa officer calling and saying, hey, let me give you some credit card advice. The loan officer always did that. Yep. You don't have people saying, here's advice on your car loan that's about to expire. What I think you do. The loan officer always did that. And right now, this market has caused the loan officer not to call that person anymore. Maybe drip very well through some AI bot or email campaign, but not call like they used to. And so that advice is going away. And the result to me is a little scary, because I think what happens is nobody gave better advice on credit scores and credit report. I mean, no offense to Credit Karma, but you can't touch a loan officer that talked to more than, you know, has closed more than 100 deals. They know credit better than anybody.
And it's free advice.
Who knows best on LinkedIn if you ever need the best advice.
Sue's awesome.
But that's all being shut off now. And so that person's credit score is going to go down to 500 before they know it. One of these $1 trillion, right now there's $1 trillion of credit card debt out there. It's going to go down. Now they can't, I guess they could use this program to touch it, but I'm not trying to say they should use it because of that.
Yeah.
And I think you want to prevent that person from getting to the point where they have equity, can't touch it, and became a byproduct of society, because the current system took out what I think is the frontline leader, or as Dave Savage calls it, the loan officer is the first responder for the financial crisis of Americans right now. And this is one of a couple opportunities. I'm a big believer in second mortgages, to get loan officers back on the phone and given that advice where deserves, or the government should pay them, but somebody should help.
Yes. We definitely spend more time coaching people through, you know, and the services are free. We don't charge for it, because we just want an excuse to talk to somebody. So if we can help them, advise them on how to fix the credit, how to, structure their taxes in some cases. I mean, we're not CPAs. We're not credit experts per se. I mean, we kind of are, but, you know, we don't have the licensing for it. We're not technically, you know, supposed to tell them what to do. And I'm certainly not an accountant, but we see tax returns every day. We know how income is structured. We know how credit reports look. We know where people spend their money. You know, we know what credit card debt is and how high it is for, you know, people all the time. I mean, I talk to people all the time that call me and they're like, oh, my credit's terrible. Or, you know, I'm sorry, I have so many credit cards, so much debt. I'm like, look, I've seen worse. Like, it's not, you know, it's not as bad as you think. And a lot of times I truly were able to make people feel better, because it's like, look, we see so many people and we talk to so many people and see their, you know, we see them financially naked, essentially, the average person, that we know what it is and we have empathy for it. Cause like, look, I understand. I mean, I got into this business 15 years ago and my credit was atrocious. I owned a business, a restaurant with a business partner, and it completely wrecked my credit and it was awful. And getting into the business and learning about it, I knew how to fix it. And so it took me a little bit of time, but I got it to where it was. And, but that was only because I came into this business and figured it out. And so you're right. I mean, the loan officer is a huge resource for a lot of folks to be able to look at their financial situation and say, hey, look, fix this, do that, you know, work on this piece. Because our incentive is, A, we want you to come back to us when you are ready to buy, even if you're not ready yet. And B, we want to take really good care of you and help you out, because we want you to tell your friend, your brother, your sister, your mom, your dad. So then that way, when they're ready to make that decision, they come to us as well. So we have every incentive in the world to help you out from a point of truly, you know, caring about it. But, you know, we're trying to grow our referral network and build our business, especially the local guy who isn't working at Quicken or working at, you know, the chop shop mortgage place, because, you know, they're not going to call you back because they have 5,000 other people calling them with all the marketing that they do. So, you know, the local person that's going to help you out is going to be a huge resource for you. And, you know, I agree, people should take more advantage of it, just because, especially right now, because they all have time on their hands. So if you got questions about your finances, call the mortgage guy. He can usually help you out.
And if anybody wants to reach out and talk about second mortgages and where their lender or parent company should be looking to being offering them, it starts up to the loan officer has to deliver it. But you were in the restaurant business. There's a great Tapper of Gary V clip that I saw years ago, but he just reposted it, where Tapper says, if somebody comes into your restaurant and has a great experience, they have like a 30% chance of coming back. Yeah. And if they come in twice, it's like 38 or 40%. But if you can get them to come in a third time and have a great experience, there is a 70% chance that comes back as a regular. And so that's another reason where the money might not be in that second. But yep. If you experience. Get them to go through a second experience with you and yes. have a great second experience, that counts as one of the three.
That's
and
great point.
Then they'll come back rather than waiting for three first mortgages, which could take a lifetime. So,
yeah.
And in mortgage, they might recommend it to others. So that 70% doesn't just mean they'll be a regular. They, like you just said, will recommend it to others. So I want to say there are reasons that right now you got to focus on that $26 trillion and purchase business.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I'm curious. So how did you get into this world? I know you said you were a loan officer before and you know, you'd kind of been on the mortgage side of things, but then you built an app and you have your podcast now. So tell me a little bit about that.
So I created the mobile app in mortgage, which I came up with the idea of the ability to track a loan throughout the loan process. Me and a partner helped bring it to life. And at one point we had 32,000 loan officers. We had $500 billion of mortgages we were mobilizing to close. Yep. And we termed items like the lending ecosystem. We realized through our clients that the real estate agent should be involved, the buyer's agent, seller's agent, loan officer. We bridged the gap between really legacy software at that time and what was becoming a mobile-centric ecosystem. And we had the tracker based on milestones. We fully integrated with the lending. It's called an LOS, but it's the operating system of a lender. And we created the tracking system years before Domino's came out with a similar looking one. Now I hear people at conferences say the Domino's pizza tracker. I always want to say we were the Domino's pizza tracker before Domino's had a pizza tracker. But it taught me a lot when you're first to market. There are so many items now that are comfortable, well accepted, that back then caused extra investment, extra adoption. And you would have lenders that didn't want the ability to choose a loan officer because they didn't want people recruiting them. Right. Now there's four softwares out there that will help lenders know exactly who's closing what loans with what real estate agents. Just so you guys know out there, real estate agents, every lender has it now. They know exactly where you're giving your deals to.
Yep.
but we had to go spend a lot of money doing the mousetrap this way, that way. And there was a lot of that. One thing that I was able to do is it was 2011. So in 2007, the iPhone came out. In 2009, the App Store came out. So we were only, 2011, the App Store came out. Sorry, I created in 2013, right before the Rocket Mortgage came out with their app. Mm-hmm. But we got ours to market a couple weeks before theirs. I obviously didn't know they were working on it. And we became the solution for every lender to have their own Rocket. And then some. And I got to talk to a lot of presidents and CEOs of mortgage companies, because back then I would say, who's in charge of Apple on the phone? And nobody really knew, right? So they would just be like, I think so-and-so is. So that's how I was able to build a Rolodex. I went to a lot of conferences because we were the leaders for a long time. And then we got ultimately another company with larger investment passed us. But I know a lot about adoption down at the in the streets level based on technology decisions made in a boardroom without real life examples.
Right. Right. And then you, you took that with your connections that you've had and, you know, now, especially cause you say you're in Washington a lot dealing with this stuff too. And you started a podcast, where you talk to it's very mortgage banking centric. So what led you to do that?
I've just always been present. And I believed even when I had the mobile app, we bootstrapped everything. It's a lonely world, you know, borrowing money, or mom and dad are using some of their Marriott points to get, but I always tried to show up. Show up was my mantra. I believed if I outshowed up other people, and I know now social media, it's build a brand. I didn't really have, Instagram didn't exist, so there wasn't that motivational, let's go. Right. So I would go to the secondary conference in New York and just sit there and work from right in the Marriott Marquis lobby. So everybody saw me, and it doesn't work once. You have to be consistent. And so 7 years in a row later at every New York's, you know, they would see me and say, boy, he's growing up. There he is. And I did it for the advocacy conference in DC. And sometimes it was my own money. Sometimes, you know, it'd be the company's money, but I made sure I continued to show up. And the podcast is really the same way. I had a vision that podcasts would be famous in 2013. There's a gentleman, Licking on Lending, that has, and I was on his podcast in 2013, but it was a radio show. You called in. I said, you should try podcasting. Like it's going to be big. He's like, and I knew I should have done it. I just never did it.
Yeah.
And so back in June, Michael Zhao and I, who I was huge on Clubhouse. I was the first one on Clubhouse. I feel like the industry to Clubhouse. We didn't go out during COVID. We had masks on and, you know, in a bubble going to Stop and Shop. But the one enjoyment would be go out to my car because I had a newborn and just there was like Tuesday night shows and there was everybody in the mortgage industry. And then when the lights came back on, everybody was allowed to go out. Clubhouse became deserted. So, but I was able to take somebody I met there. We said we were going to make the show just to prove we could be consistent. And now we haven't missed a Thursday since June, and we've done it from like 26 different states. I don't even want to say some of the places like we've had to run over and do it from, but the podcast to me was just a test to myself. Can I do this consistently? Because you've been telling yourself for years you were, quote, gonna do it.
Yeah.
And my dad always used to call me Mikey gonna do growing up, and I didn't like that. So
yeah,
this would have been another quiver, another arrow in his quiver. I didn't want to allow it.
Well, I think we're all anybody. My opinion is that anybody that does anything of any significance probably has a list of 100 things that they were gonna do, right? Because you got to go through a list of all those things that you were going to do before you get to the thing that you actually do. And I think if you're never going to do anything, then you never do anything. And so it takes a little bit of ideas. And, you know, I joke with my wife all the time because I'm very much, hey, we should do this. Hey, we should try this. Hey, we should do that. And she's always looking at me like, you know that you're not going to do that. I know. I was like, I'm just putting it in the idea bucket. I say I have an idea bucket. I'm just dropping it in there. You know, if it comes up later, you know, whatever, you know, I said we should have done it. We
maybe we did, we didn't. But I think that's part of, you know, finding your way through this. I mean, it's, I'm kind of the same, you know, this, when it comes to, you know, social media and doing anything out there, it was something that I knew was important, right? I knew I needed to be on social media because these days, I don't even think you should call it, you know, the idea that it's called social media makes it, it has this negative connotation, but it's no different than cable TV. Look, if you, you know, when they did the whole, like the Wayne's World, you know, where you had the closed circuit cable channels, you know, that's what this is essentially. That's what it is. And so it doesn't cost anything. It doesn't take anything but effort and time. And especially now with AI being what it is, there's a ton of things that you can do on your own to save yourself time to actually produce it and put it out there. That's relatively easy. But I knew for myself that I wasn't going to stand in front of a camera and, you know, do a dance or make some silly video because, you know, it just wasn't my personality necessarily. But I like to have conversations. I like to talk to people. I like to find out what they do, how they do it. I'm very interested. I'm a very curious person. And so this was a perfect avenue for me to sit down and chat with somebody and go, okay, tell me about what you do, why you're doing it. And let me find out a little bit more, because the more I can understand is going to help me in my business, because I preach this all the time. And I very much believe it is that the more I understand about all facets of real estate, whether it be how, what a realtor has to do, what a title company has to do, what roofers do, what insurance companies do, what mortgage lenders do, and what's involved with all that, the better I'm going to be at my job as a whole. Because like you said in the beginning, our job as lenders, we talk to people every single day. And so if I can, I don't sell interest rates. I don't sell mortgages. Really, you know what I sell every day? I sell my brain. I sell what I understand, what I've learned from other people. I'm not saying that I'm smart or that I know anything better. I just talk to a lot of people and I'm very curious about information. And so holding that information, aggregating it out and using it to help my clients. So doing this has helped me in two things. It's got me in front of, as you know, more and more people. It's got me to meet wonderfully interesting people like yourself. I've interviewed a lot of really great people on the show and had created new relationships with them. And it's grown my knowledge base. So when I talk to my clients on a day-to-day basis, and when I work with my team and their clients, then I'm able to help them, you know, impart knowledge and impart information. So their clients value them even more. And that's really what you gain. And you don't have to do podcasting. You can do a million other things, find your lane for what it is. But I think that's how you grow.
Yeah. And build your brand now and yeah, do what you're going to do. Right. I think you said it best, but I would, especially if you're in real estate and mortgage and maybe the deals are coming harder because we can't control it. A lot of it's inventory. It's nothing but inventory. So if inventory's slow, get a microphone. And you can do it all on YouTube, right? Like that's where you can learn everything. That's where I learned to get this microphone. Actually, this microphone, I watched an episode of Alex Hansen. But that's proof. Like I was watching his show and bought this microphone. So you can provide value to people you have no idea. He probably had no idea I would do that when he made it, but he put it out there. So I think an outsource, like you said, is AI, but use Fiverr, use Upwork. You have to get involved there. And if you find somebody great on those, do what you can to keep them.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Mike to Mike, I really appreciate you coming on and chatting about this stuff. I think this is a very interesting, a way to, you know, to be able to get into equity that otherwise you wouldn't have been able to do. And I do think, you know, it's going to be a much, much bigger player as rates stay, if rates stay higher, which at least in the near future, it looks like that's going to be the case, then there's going to have to be other creative ways for people to be able to get in touch with that, you know, trillions of dollars of equity and do something with it to help grow, like you said, generational wealth. And I think this is a great tool for it. So I really appreciate you coming on and talking about it. It's an innovative thing. You know, it's not mainstream yet, but it certainly looks like it's moving that way. So coming to a lender near you. But before we go, let everybody know about your podcast, where to find you, all that kind of stuff. And then we'll hop out.
Sure. And I see you and your podcast and your guests on my newsfeed all the time. So it pays off, right? It amplifies what you're doing. If you want to listen to our podcast, a lot of the things we do is we talk raw about the mortgage industry and real estate when we can. If it's in the news and we can find somebody to talk raw about it, say something they might not always say, you just follow hashtag MoreTalk, MoreTalk on LinkedIn and you'll find it. Or you can YouTube and search MoreTalk or look for it on Spotify, MoreTalk, MoreTalk. And if you need me for any questions about this program, or really you want to talk tinfoil hat or what's coming in mortgage, you can text me 781-367-0068. It's fast, it's easy, and I'll always respond.
Mike's giving out his cell phone. I love it. All right, man. Well, I appreciate it as always. We're moving into the weekend. Hopefully, we have tomorrow the actual PCE numbers will be coming out. So we'll see if inflation is going to be nice to us in that. It doesn't seem like it will be, but we shall see. I do think you'll see some changes in the job market coming soon. I think we're already starting to see those numbers weaken a little bit. So I don't know. You know, stock market's down today. Everything's down today. GDP's down. Maybe we're on the cusp of this recession, you know, that we've been waiting for, not waiting for, but expecting to kick in. Maybe it's about to happen. I don't know. We'll see. But either way, we'll keep you in the loop about it. I'll have my market update out on Tuesday next week. Otherwise, everybody have a great weekend, and we'll see you next time.